Coming to you from dreary Portland, Oregon.
What the fuck?
Shut up, lady. You're fucking up the audio.
Your hosts, Katie Cassidy and Aaron Brancher, have some hot takes on film, cinema, and the movies. That's all the same thing. It's the Ask Backwards Podcast. You idiot. You moron. You stupid.
Okay, yeah, so I'm Katie Cassidy, this is Aaron Brancher, and we're going to have Minnie on this week. Connor Minnie is going to be on the spotlight, and we're talking about, like, bleak indie films. We're going to go over a good handful of them, and you're going to hear it, and it's going to go now.
All right, I guess that's it. I just won't say any words. All right, that's it. All right, bye. You won't see me again for the rest of the show.
All right, so okay. Yeah, we'll talk about...
Okay, so we can just lead into the conversation.
Yeah, we just could just blast in head first. We're going to talk about Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, Vivarium, Dog Pound, Requiem for a Dream, and SLC Punk to just kind of guide it, I guess, right? And
we're just gonna be talking about sad guy movies, yeah. We like that nobody else.
I'm
really
the simp,
is into.
But I feel like you have your like emotional simp moments. We could be the emo guys together, and I like that. And
oh,
we have
I
the
fucking,
emo guy taste.
I love movies like this.
Yeah,
this shit makes me feel so good and bad at the same time.
Yeah, I feel sick with questioning humanity, but it also makes me feel reborn.
And like, I just. When I watch a movie like that, it's like, fuck, man. It just made me feel really bad.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard for a movie to do that. Like, you know what I mean? Like, even in, like, sad guy movies, like we saw that that Ben Affleck movie where he was, like, the basketball coach The Way Back. And we were super...
I don't think I've seen that.
Well, we were super excited about it because it was, like... Oh, Ben Affleck in a really sad, emotional movie.
Yeah, everyone loves the Affleck. Classic.
And it pooped the bed. And you're like, you had all the components there and you missed it.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, I feel like a lot of these, like, have those components as well. And they hit the mark every time.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes you feel really, really, really bad. But in, like, the best way possible.
Yeah. Like a self-reflective, bleak way. Yeah, I feel like out of these five movies, what I, like, really felt like they had in common. I sat down this morning. I finished Eternal Sunshine this morning and was like, all right, that shook me up, which we need to get into. But out of all of these, what I feel like had the kind of overarching theme is, like, you see a really big shift in these characters' humanity, whether they're gaining it or losing it. And even in some of them, like, Dog Pound kind of losing it, gaining it, losing it again, like, kind of a roller coaster with the humanity and, like, how that sits in their own self-reflection. And I feel like... these movies. Vivarium, not so much, honestly.
It's the outlier, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, not the strongest, but it still does have some of those, like, fundamental questions of our humanity and, like, where that switch kind of flips so we, like, no longer see that human traits in each other.
Vivarium is, like, these movies in the sense that they try to tackle, like, a bigger subject and get really into, like, the mind of a person.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it be, like, a group of people or just one, like, character. And it just doesn't hit the mark.
Yeah.
Whereas the other ones do.
No, with Vivarium, I feel like there's so much. And for anyone that hasn't seen it, I guess we could run through it a little, right?
Yeah. Do you want to start?
Yeah, sure. So it's, like, Jesse Eisenberg being Jesse Eisenberg, which we all love at this point. Like, just be Social Network everywhere.
Just keep doing that.
Yeah.
Do Zombieland 1.
Yeah, Zuckerberg and Zombieland it up on everything, and I'm into it.
Well, actually, have you seen 30 Minutes or Less?
I haven't,
That's a really funny fucking
Is it really?
Movie. It's so good. Danny McBride is at his, like, best. Telling fucking Nick Swardson. He's like, fuck yeah, they're wearing monkey masks. He's like, you move, we'll kick you in the head. You want to see his kicks? And Nick Swardson doing karate kicks.
Like,
yeah.
Goofy, fun one.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be nice to see him in that. Because I feel like even Jesse Eisenberg...
just sucks.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that guy... I thought he got canceled. Now he seems to be back on the scene. Don't really know. But not really a fan. Because he just does the voice and the jumping. And that's really the end of it. Like, that's his act. Yeah.
He sounds like if Mini-Me could, like, actually talk.
The articulated...
It's just Mini-Me. Just articulate anything.
Yeah.
But yeah,
Vivarium.
So, Vivarium is, like, Jesse Eisenberg being himself, and he's what does he do? He cuts down trees. He's like a construction worker. He's a handyman.
Is he? I don't really know what.
Because like that's why they had the shit in the trunk of their car. You know, they had like a shovel.
You're right. You're right. You're right. They did have those like random tools. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And in the beginning, that bird fell from the fucking nest, and the teacher mom was like talking to the little girl. She's like, "Oh yeah, everything dies, and it's sad sometimes."
Yeah. No,
the and movie. You're like, okay, bleak movie.
Yeah. I feel like it took. Oh, yeah. So it starts with that. They go to.
Jesse Eisenberg, nice guy, digs a hole and buries the bird. Yeah. Trying to get laid. Like,
you see that?
I'm emotional.
I'm in touch. Smooch me. Like, all right. Yeah. No. But. So I feel like they take the concept where they go, you know, on their house hunt. And it's like the couple are trying to find where they move in. And. End up in this maze of a Edward Scissorhands hell dreamscape, sort of like everything's cookie cutter. They can't get out, and I get it. It's the metaphor, like your marriage, and you get sucked into the life, and like, you know, get wrapped up in marriage and routine and monotony, and they get like assigned to that weird alien kid, which I feel like we really need to talk about once we run them through this plot. So
Jesus Christ,
they get assigned this stupid kid that they don't want, and it makes them their parents against his will, basically. Makes them his parents against their will, basically.
Yeah.
And, yeah, and it all
kind of... And it, kinda, like, talks in, like, a weird British man's voice when he's, like, a five-year-old, and he screams when he doesn't get fucking cereal.
Babadook style, though. Yeah. kind of scream.
Yeah, but, like, it's, like, the Babadook, but...
But not.
But it's, like, a grown man.
Yeah, the Babadook, but a grown man with alfalfa hair from Little Rascals.
It was fucking gross. And Jesse Eisenberg is like, fucking, I fucking hate this fucking thing.
Exactly, hate the guy.
He tried to fucking kill it.
He said he's going to starve it.
Yeah, he wanted to starve it in their car, which I was like, fuck yeah, this movie is sick.
Yeah, he was ready. He was about it. He's like, fuck this
then
guy.
Then the mom is like, no, it might be a boy.
Yeah.
And then turns out, like... The thing ages, like, rapidly.
Yeah, it's like a sim age up. It just lasts.
So, like, a year into their stay in Vivarium.
Yeah,
or,
then the timeline, I feel like, is really unclear. Like, I know it's supposed
they do
to
it
be,
by,
but...
They did it by days, how tall he got. That's how you could tell.
There it is. I was wondering, like, what's up with the how tall thing.
So, like,
yeah,
I didn't get it exactly. Like, I couldn't tell you which scene was in what time
frame. But you understood
but
the...
given the thing, like, you can look and assume...
So how long about was he there? Because I didn't...
Until the very end, about, like, I want to say, like, 2 years.
Oh, wow.
I
want to
say that they were only there for, like, 600 days.
Oh, wow, wow, wow. Okay, so all this happened in, like, a really short timeline.
Yeah.
Okay.
And yeah, so fucking, he wanted to starve him, but like, you know, 2 years into it, he's like a grown man and he's like threatening now.
Yeah, he's a powerful guy.
But in the meantime, Jesse Eisenberg smoked his like last little bud of a cigarette that keeps respawning every day, I think. I think that's how it
like
was happening.
Like Groundhog's Day vibe?
Yeah, like it was respawning every day, like at the end of the driveway where he threw it out.
Yeah.
And in the beginning of the movie. And then he throws it into the yard, and then the grass disappears, and he's like, oh shit, I forgot, I'm a handyman, I'm gonna go in the back of my girlfriend's car, bust out the old pickaxe and the shovel, my two favorite tools to have together when I'm in
I'm a
tree
minor.
In the beginning of the movie. He was in a tree in the beginning.
The old pickaxe, come
on. Yeah, the old pickaxe in the tree.
The old lumberjack
axe. Forgot about Minecraft, but fucking... And he just starts digging this big fuck-off hole in the front yard.
Yeah, he just starts going to town.
And he's like, let me dig. It's what I'm good at. Let me dig.
Yeah, it's his source of power.
Lack of eyebrows.
I feel like I'm rewatching the scene.
And then he's like, for like, when he like dips his like hand in for the first time, like when he's about wrist deep in this hole.
Yeah, he just...
He, like, it's all yellow and shit. You're like, okay, big goops.
Yeah.
Like, is he about to... Dig goop
like
out of the
sweet
world.
Sweet pus hole,
And then, like, they get rid of that, and then they're just like, yeah, no, now it's just, like, weird clay dirt for the rest of the way, and it just doesn't stop.
That upset me. The whole, like, I felt like, oh, so many thoughts on it. I feel like there was so much potential in this movie because they have this really, I mean, yeah, basic, but you could expand on the concept, like, of trapped in the monotony of marriage and, like, kind of, like, almost just a capitalist cycle, really. Like, get married, have a kid, buy a house, live in this, you know? Just, like, okay, so we have that. And they kind of tapped into it a little bit on each end, but not enough. I feel like they just didn't know where they were going with it, maybe. And that's just obviously from where I'm sitting, but I just,
it felt
underdeveloped.
It felt like what they would need to do is they would need to take Jesse Eisenberg's character and the British girl's, I forget her, I don't know her name.
The Kate Winslet twin. Yeah. She's like gorgeous. I was like, is that Kate Winslet? Oh, yeah, I literally had to look it up. I was like, what the fuck, super hot Kate Winslet twin?
But I feel like what they would have to do is they would have to have those two going at each other more. Like, you know what I mean? That would be, like, the representation for marriage.
Like Marriage Story movie vibes. Like
kind of.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Like the
yeah,
real raw.
Exactly yeah. that. I haven't seen a Marriage Story. Mm-hmm.
It was great. It was crazy. It was very much, like,
I gotta check it out. Kylo Ren's head just fucks me up. I don't like looking at his face.
It's bulbous, but talented.
Yeah. I gotta see it. But, yeah, no, like, I feel like they would have just had to beef their yeah. relationship up, and you'd be like, all right, this feels like a failing marriage. I yeah. heard parts of a failing marriage. Like
something I do think they I really did like was how they had that weird alien kid. They had him doing that mimicking thing. So he was,
oh, yeah.
they were having this alien kid talk, you know, in Jesse Eisenberg's voice or hot Kate Winslet twin's voice.
Can I smoke a cigarette, by the way?
Yeah.
Okay.
Let me pop this.
Yeah. Coolio.
So they, oh wait, actually right under the smoke alarm, I'm a little worried.
Never mind.
Okay. Yeah, I'm a little worried. At any rate, we, see, like, the hot Kate Winslet twin and Jesse Eisenberg, with this kid. What the hell was I talking about?
Oh, the mimicking thing.
Oh, yeah, the mimicking thing. Thanks. So, he's, like, spitting it back into their face almost, how you would see, like, maybe in a relationship people do, like, bring back things you said out of context and give it right to you, you know, and shove it in your face and they're shitty with it. And I thought that was kind of cool how they had the kid do it, because that very much does happen. Kids see the stuff that happens in households, bring it back up, you know, the spite, it happens, it bleeds into the whole house. I thought that was cool how they had it so spot on, and the wife was just so disgusted by this kid, like, it seemed like on the level of his own existence and on top of it what he was bringing from Jesse Eisenberg's character, you know. And I thought that was really cool. I thought it was different. Like I said, like, a lot of potential, but it wasn't, I feel like it didn't meet its, like, max. It could have been really cool. And all of it just kind of dabbled in.
They were just not talking about the right stuff.
No. The right idea is wrong, like, actual content in the dialogue, I feel
focusing
like.
Focusing on eating, like, the flavorless eggs.
Yeah.
Like,
we get it. Life's bland.
Yeah. Like, they could have, they wanted you to work for what you thought the movie meant, which
yeah.
I guess good for you, but at the end of the day, who fucking, you need to set your own rules.
Mm-hmm.
You need to be able to determine where you want your movie to go
yeah,
a little bit.
The characters didn't resolve themselves, and I feel like they were kind of hoping it would, or maybe they were hoping it was artsy enough that people would speculate, but my speculation is, like, give me more.
Yeah, like, you had a good idea here, and you
mm-hmm.
you soiled it. Like,
yeah.
You soiled your
you
opportunity.
You botched it.
Yeah, you fucked it up. Like, this was a cool idea. You had Jesse Eisenberg.
Yeah,
like,
Jesse Eisenberg was fucking in.
Yeah, like,
Social Network was in.
That's what I'm saying. Like, this man is a talent.
Yeah.
But, all right,
let's
fuck that movie.
Let's move on. So Vivarium is,
let's talk, okay, I've been wanting to talk about SLC Punk.
Okay, let's talk about SLC Punk. Run them through if you guys haven't seen it. So,
okay, so I had never seen SLC Punk until, like, 3 days ago, right? The day before, the night before Halloween.
Yeah.
I fucking stayed up super late. I watched that whole fucking movie. I tried to pirate it first, and it had, like, three ads, and I went, fuck that. Got 20 minutes into the
movie
with ads.
I need unfiltered Lillard.
So I rented the movie. So I'm trying to pirate it.
I paid in.
And, yeah, I fucking watched that whole fucking thing. I started it over, and I was like, fuck, man, this movie is so good. I love Matthew Lillard. And I love Matthew Lillard for, like, the stupid wrong reasons. Because, like, I just love his goofy face. I love Shaggy. I love
yeah.
13 Ghosts. I'm just in on Matthew Lillard.
Yeah, he's the cool guy.
Just,
I'm in with
oh, and
you.
Scream. I love Scream.
Yeah, classic.
Like, I always had a thing for you, Sid. Like, I loved
yeah,
Matthew
he's
Lillard.
A grandiose, silly guy.
And god damn, this blew my fucking mind.
Yeah.
His monologues, flawless.
Why is he so talented?
I don't know. They did, like, they broke away so he could just, like, the camp, like, the movie would just be mid party. You're just experiencing this party with these characters, and then somebody brings up a topic of conversation. They talk about it for a minute, And then Matthew Lillard fucking pulls like old Kevin Smith, looks at the camera. It's like, this party's really loud.
Yeah.
Mike is the most hardcore guy I've ever seen. And his energy is just perfect. And I love the way the movie just like spent, like that party scene.
They break in and out of that fourth wall so many times. And it doesn't
for like
even,
30 minutes.
Yeah. And you don't even realize.
No, you don't. It's fucking flawless. You're just like, you don't need like event. You right. just need to like, let me in on what these people are about. And then you just see life through their eyes until you, he tells you, he's like, but I'm tired of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then they end it narratively.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's like, so unique. I feel like the way it's edited, the way it was like pieced together, just unique. It cuts in and out of so many different styles.
Like, that was one of those things, like, where it started doing that, and I was like, man, I feel like I'm gonna have a hard time following this movie. And I fucking didn't. Like, they do it so perfectly. Like, they let you in on what's going on. They're like, here's what we're doing now, and here's where we're going to go.
Mm-hmm.
And it, just so perfect. Just, it's such a flawless transition from fourth wall breaking monologue to real life intense dramatic moment that's happening right
yeah.
like right in front of you.
I agree. So anyone that doesn't know, like, I mean, we kind of blasted in, but basically, like, long story short is it's these, you know, teenagers, college age, that are just wrapping up their graduation. They live in Salt Lake City, Utah, and they're like punks and anarchists, and it's just Matty Lilly just figuring his life out, really, and
like, they live, like, a real fucking punk lifestyle, too. Like,
yeah.
They fucking hate posers.
Yeah, there's a big, and that's, like, touching on the whole, like, hating poser thing, I feel like that's where we kind of see in SLC Punk, like, again, like, another really big character dynamic shift and realization and almost in humanity, like, Matthew Lillard going through this really hardcore lifestyle to seeing, like, okay, like, maybe I need to, like, open my mind, open my eyes to, like, this isn't the only way. And that's cool because it's driven home the whole movie by his character that, like, anyone that doesn't stick with it is a poser. And, I don't know, seeing that character development throughout it, I think, is really, honestly, kind of made me sad almost in a way. It was really real and making it just feel like, damn, like, everything's not what you hope it is and you're not always what you think you are.
Yeah, and there, because, like, I'm not a punk. Like, I don't live that lifestyle
yeah.
at all. You, a little bit more so than I, but, like, I don't live that lifestyle. But, I mean, like, what's being said there, like you were saying, just everything isn't what you hope it is sometimes. And you just have to develop as a person. And
yeah.
you have to be okay with that sometimes, even if that means, like, you have to let parts of your life go.
And that's, like...
And he just so happened to do it in the biggest way possible.
Yeah.
Like, and, like, the most dramatic and most fucked up way. And I just love that shift. Like, he's making fun of his friends for being posers and not about this fucking lifestyle because he's so smart.
Yeah.
He thinks the way he does. He's a big fucking talker. He's fucking about it.
Yeah.
Like, with his relationship with his dad, like, they don't take shit from each other.
Yeah.
They just talk. And I love that relationship,
I
actually.
I thought that was awesome.
They respected each other.
Yeah.
Weirdly enough. But, yeah, like, they were always just fucking about it, and they didn't want to save face for anybody.
Yeah.
Except for the drug dealer. Because they needed to score sometimes.
Right.
But, yeah, like, he was calling people out. He was calling fucking Bob a poser.
Yeah, calling everyone a poser that wasn't on his same agenda.
Yeah, and then ultimately he came to the decision. He's like, what if I'm the poser?
Yeah, he rapped. Literally, I think the last line is like, I know what you're thinking. I'm just one big trendy-ass poser. And, like I said, kind of makes me sad. Like, it's a cute wrap-up. It's a real wrap-up. But it just makes me sad, like, movie world shattered, you know, like, real life hits, like, life goes on, you gotta adapt, you gotta change, you can't just, like, be the fun
That's
punk
not
guy.
Like, it's not just, like, a fun, tight, wrapped up story
yeah,
and
no,
you
it's
walk
like,
away from it, you're like, fuck, that meant something.
Yeah, exactly.
And that really hit home with me, and now I have to go live my life knowing that this movie exists
yes.
and talked about something
yes.
that maybe I haven't been able to.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I love that movie. The next day I was like, fuck, I don't have a Halloween costume, and I went balls out, and I tried to be him.
Yeah, you committed. It was cool. That was sick.
Went out and bought my fucking schmedium leather, my schmedium jacket, put fucking bobby pins in it, and dyed my hair blue. Still a little blue. I've been washing the fuck out of it.
We gotta dye it to be the blonde boy.
I want to do that.
Blonde boys
know
what blonde boys do.
Exactly. But, You know what movie that me and you both really like?
What?
Requiem.
Oh my god. Alright, let's pop off. I feel like we've been waiting to have this conversation for an eternity. Mm-hmm. Okay, alright. Anyone that hasn't seen Requiem, I feel like it's really so convoluted. Basically, like a weird short IMDb synopsis. It follows the story of like four intertwined people who are like struggling with drug addiction, but not in like
the same way.
The same way at all.
They're all experiencing it in totally different.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
We have Jared Leto, Jennifer, what?
Connelly.
Yeah, Jennifer Connelly.
The mom from The Exorcist.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's who she is. Yeah. And Wayne's brother, God. I don't know their names. That was before my time. One of the Wayans brothers, but he's killing it in there, dude. Being the serious guy.
Yeah.
And really was awesome. Was riveting, if you will. Riveting performance.
It's such a beautiful movie. It's so spastic and lively. Like, you're about these characters, and then the music in that movie, I love.
The soundtrack is sickening. And, like, okay, so, yeah, we have these characters, and they all go through this weird tale of drug addiction, and Jared Leto and Jennifer Connelly are like this hot heroin chic couple, and then the Wayans brother and Leto are like coming up on the heroin game. The
heroin,
yeah.
And then I believe he was doing meth.
Oh, was he?
Yeah.
I haven't seen it in a minute, but yeah, probably.
Not Leto, fucking.
The Wayans brother.
Yeah. God, yeah. Why can't I think of his name? I think it's Sean.
His name was Marcus in the movie.
Yeah.
And that's all I remember.
Okay, Marcus.
Yeah.
Fucking.
So we have, yeah, Marcus and Leto will just mix their names.
Yeah.
Coming up on the heroin game. They're coming up as these low-level users, and they're going to start peddling because it's dry where they're at. So they're coming up and getting money and sort of taking that path. And then fucking Leto's mom.
Yeah, that's the hardest thing,
that
man. Because if it was just another person, mm-hmm. you know, like one of their friends or, like, you know, I wouldn't care as much. It's the fact that it's this sweet woman.
This old, innocent woman.
Who has just been manipulated and fucking tortured by her son after her fucking husband's dead. Like, this woman is lonely. And if she wasn't some tough New Jersey broad, she probably would have packed it in and killed herself already. But no, she loves her son and her family.
Yeah.
And she loves TV.
She's living for Jared Leto and for TV. Her whole arc is like she gets the
phone call saying that she can be on TV.
Yeah, her favorite talk show, she could go on there. And so that's how she gets on her drug run.
And what's her favorite memory? Of graduation.
Oh, yeah. Her son and her
husband in her red dress.
Yes. Yeah.
And that's all she wanted for TV.
Yeah.
And this was her new reason to live.
That's what... Ready.
Yeah. Fucking do it. I'm fucking ready.
I feel like that's what really sparks her, like, little, like...
Spark.
Sparks. Yes. Lil Wayne. And so... that's what, like, sparks her kind of, like, descent to it. She wants to go on the show. You know, she gets her ticket, like, golden ticket, come on down, head ass. And she's like, yeah, I want to fit into my red dress. So she starts her dieting. It doesn't work. And
that's how she gets on those. I love that editing, too. Like, she'll take, like, a big chomp out of an egg.
Yes.
And then, like, a smaller bite. And then she's like, because she doesn't want to do it.
Yeah. No, and it's bad. And the grapefruit just, the scoop out. And, like, because she goes on that weird grapefruit egg diet at first. And then gets on these... basically, like, Adderall-type amphetamine thing that was, at the time, you know, popular for weight loss.
Given to her by a nice doctor.
By her doctor. Big Pharma fucking peddling their agenda on this nice old woman. And now she's addicted. So we have these four people that all are in each other's lives on different levels. And we get to see them all really descend into such dark places.
Like, totally different ones, too.
Totally different dark places. And all together, but so separate. And it's just sickening and cool. And like you said, the music, every time it cues that song, you know it's just going to be unbearable to watch what's about to happen.
It fucks me up every time. But I love the movie. Because, like, that's another thing. You don't root for a lot of these kids. Like, the only person you really kind of feel bad for is the mom. Because, like, you feel bad for them all, but... at the same time, you're like, you know what you're doing here. You put yourself in this position.
Yeah, literally.
You've been, like, time and time again, you were, like, able to start getting out of it. And you just keep going. And it's sad.
It is sad. But what really had me, and I just feel like is very real with addiction, is, like, Marcus and Leto, they had... Here, fuck, it isn't lighted. It's like... It's all fucked up. Basically, Leto and Marcus, they're on their heroin come up, right? They're going to start peddling into this, like, now dry market. They're like, yeah, we're going to go and we're going to fucking pick up this heroin and sell it. And we're going to, like, make our money back. And it starts working. And Leto starts, like, putting the money back into Jennifer Connelly's character's, like, fashion thing. Like, they're going to open a little store and a business front and stuff. And then all of a sudden, I think they start using more than they're selling and basically go dry. And then they're belly up in their heroin business and it's fucking dunzo.
It's this big cerebral, like, case study into four people and the life of, like, crime, drugs, and loneliness, I would say. Like...
Yeah, fuck it. We'll fuck with it later.
I'd say we leave it at that, and I think people should really watch that
movie. Yeah, definitely. I mean, out of all the spoilers we've given, out of all of that, I feel like that's one to leave to them, because it has this, like, cool descent, and out of all of these movies, I'd say, honestly, I think it's my favorite, and it does have, in my opinion, next to Dog Pound, I think the bleakest ending. I think Dog Pound tops it, though.
Yeah, I would agree. So... Yeah, no, Requiem is... When people ask me, like, what are my favorite movies, I always think of Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind and Requiem for a Dream.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know which one is my favorite.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they both mean so, like, two completely different things to me,
mm-hmm.
but they both feel really bad and good at the same time. Like almost on opposite ends of the spectrum. I feel better after watching Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. I feel gross.
There's resolution.
Yeah, I feel gross and fucking hurt to my core when I watch Requiem, but I love that feeling because I'm like, fuck, man, that's really powerful.
Yeah, it's like
we sound like the two biggest e-boys right now. Like,
I love the pain.
The pain feels so good.
I feel alive.
But no, man, it's just really powerful, and I just love, like, the style of movie it's in.
I do too, and I feel like
it means a lot to me.
Yeah,
like, I feel like I know people like this. I feel. Like, I understand a little bit, and it sucks. And I hate to see what
yeah.
they're going through.
Yeah, 100%. Because I feel like, for sure, with Requiem, we see these, like, very raw, real stories that happen in addiction and the lengths people go to in order to get high and in order to, you know, chase this thing. And we see it, like we were saying, on all of these different levels and all of these different places in life. From, like, an old woman, a young woman, like, we have, like, a younger white guy, a younger black guy. So we get, like, races, age, gender, like, all spread across the board.
Status,
and how addiction.
Yeah.
And status, for sure, because we have the mom who's pretty, not, you know, she obviously doesn't have a lot of money, but she's financially comfortable. She has her little place. She mm-hmm. has her little stuff. You know, she's fine.
She's not fighting for money.
Exactly. And then we have, on the other end of the scale, you know, Leto and...
Who's been dirt poor.
Yeah.
Knows he's dirt poor.
And is stealing
and
from his own mother to get more money.
Exactly. And then you have his girlfriend, who does come from a higher place of living.
Yeah, her family's rich.
Exactly. And expects more out of life. And is, like, and perpetuating this cycle of drug use and fucking crime.
Yeah.
To, like, suit hers and his needs.
Yeah. Yeah, she's just joining
in on it. You know
who's
the only person who kind of was just chilling?
Hmm.
Fucking... Wayne's brother.
He kind of
it's
was
disrespectful
just
that I'm not, like...
Yeah, can we get his...
I'm looking his name up.
Marlon. I want to say it's Marlon, but I... Like I said, that was kind of before my time. I was younger when they were popular. While you look him up, give me one
There's
sec.
There's just three Wayne's brothers, and I just confused their names.
Hold on. Pause one second.
No, you're right. It is Marlon.
Wait.
Yeah, and Sean is the main character from... You can just put... This doesn't matter. I was just going to bring up the movie Little Man.
Oh, bro, that matters. Don't be crazy. Don't play. That matters.
That does matter. Bring it up the movie. Little Man slapped, all right?
I'm Little Man did slap.
Yeah, dude. Little
and Man what was that CGI? What was that, like 2008 or something?
Oh,
like, that
my
was
God.
Good.
I would say...
It's cool.
I would say 7 or 8.
Yeah, dude, it was
like,
cool.
It came out after Norbit, but didn't have the budget of Norbit.
What the hell's Norbit?
Are you kidding me? Eddie Murphy's Norbit?
Haven't seen it.
Oh my God, Eddie Murphy plays a Chinese man. Eddie Murphy plays a big fat black woman
who is his wife. Being the versatile
Eddie Murphy.
Guy.
Eddie Murphy plays his own wife in the movie. Rasputia. Terry All Crews right. is his brother-in-law.
Terry Crews, you haven't seen her. Are you serious?
Cat Williams makes a funny joke and says, "God damn, that cow must be what buttermilk comes from," or some shit like that. And it made me laugh.
I'm not familiar with the work. I hate to say
it. Should watch Norbit.
Next week we're talking Norbit, we're talking Norbit.
Scary Movie 4.
You name it. Okay, so let's pop on to, all right, we got to hit Eternal Sunshine and Dog Pound, bro.
Talk to me about
it. You lead the way.
Talk to me about Eternal Sunshine. You just had just had a fresh mind with this, and you said you need some help with it.
I do. Okay, so yeah, like I was saying, I watched it for the first time this morning, and, okay, first of all, I cried twice. I'm always crying. Like I said, I'm a sim, but.
What parts?
I was big time crying. Toward the end. Well, I'll get to it. Let me work my way through and not skip to the end. So, I'm watching it. I think I actually have notes on it. I was pretty shook. Okay. So I really felt like it captured that sort of like change and shift and loss and gain of humanity that I was talking about a little earlier. Like, I think everyone could sort of relate to, of course, like just being so over a situation and a person that you just want to like get them out of your head and get it out of your head. So like, cool. The movie follows that, which I love. And I feel like through it though, we see such a clinical approach to like such an emotional like thing. And like heartache is obviously emotional. It's in our head. And, they take this like weird clinical, like sci-fi dystopian approach. Like, yeah, we could like wipe these memories from your head. Dope.
Yeah, we can just get them out.
Yeah, like we'll get those out of there, dude. Like,
you can come into a fucking what looks like a vet's office to do it.
Literally. And then we have like cute Kirsten Dunst like at the front, like knowing she's
Kirsten Dunst teeth.
Yeah, with her Kirsten Dunst teeth, you know, being like the smiley blonde, bring it on guy. I'm like, love it. Okay, she's on the scene. And
Mark Ruffalo, bro.
Yeah, I was happy to see him. Dude, I like him.
I like his character.
I'm
in this
very
movie.
Happy to see him. And I wanted to talk about them. So yeah, basically the lack of humanity thing. We have this clinical approach to this heartache, right? That's already very, you know, inhuman. Of course, we can go to therapy. We do like whatever we do, like as people in society, real life to get through that. But like already, what a weird concept. And then we move into it. And as we see them extracting the memories, I thought it was really cool how we see how the employees of this place that do the erasing are just so removed from it when we see Kirsten Dunst and Mark Ruffalo
having a kick-ass dance party.
Having a fucking dance party on Joel's body. I'm like, dude, fucking Jim Carrey's just laid out here getting his mind, like, erased, and they're dancing over his body. They're laying there, shoving him out of the way like he's a beanbag or something. I'm like, just such a removal of humanity. And then we see at the end sort of almost like, I don't know if entitled is the right word, but I feel like when Kirsten Dunst gets humbled with that crazy plot twist of how, like, she had the relationship with her fucking doctor or whatever, with the doctor, right? And it had been erased. I was like, dude, first of all, I would have been sent into fucking rage if I were her. She was very collected, I felt. Yeah. But yeah, so her finding that out, and I feel like...
Well, think how, like you were saying, how disconnected she is from it already.
Exactly. Yeah, so she...
So, like... Finding out it happened to her, she's going to be more like, I don't think she would be as angry. I feel like how she acted was, like, exactly how she would have acted.
Really?
Considering how, like, you were saying, how disconnected she is from the procedure itself.
Well, that's what I was getting to. I felt like there was a little entitlement.
So, her spitefulness and, like, how she approached how she was going to, like, rectify what happened to her.
Mm-hmm.
How she just went... This is fucked.
Yeah.
I don't want anyone else ever having to go through this.
She aired it out.
And she aired that shit out like crazy. And I was like, I respect the fuck out of that.
Of course I respect that, but I also feel, and like, of course, like part of changing who you are in character development in life is making mistakes and learning from them. So yeah, we could say that that's what she did. But also I just felt like a tinge of irritation. Like, so you went 20 minutes before dancing over this heartbroken man's body to now you feel that you deserve the empathy you weren't giving him.
Actually, yeah, no, that's a good point.
Yeah.
No, that's a very good point.
Yeah, like,
I agree
fuck
with you. What the fuck am I talking about? Yeah, no, I mean, like, I like what it does for the rest of the story, you know? I've never necessarily looked at it from her perspective because, I mean, she is a side character.
Yeah, she is a side character.
I could give a fuck. Like, her story is not even near as interesting as the other story going on.
No, I thought it was scandalous.
Yeah.
Interesting, no. But yes, scandalous.
All right, Aaron Bradshaw.
Aaron Bradshaw making his debut.
Oh, he got the Sergeant Yeager camelback.
No, it's a climbing backpack.
What's so, up?
I have to interrupt your little program here to tell you about this hobo story that just happened outside.
All right, yeah.
Just figured it wouldn't hurt the show to bring up the Portland of it all. So I'm walking by a row of tents, which is usual because every sidewalk has a row of tents. And this one hobo is screaming at another one. He's like, bro! And one's holding the one's holding the bag of oranges and like trying to get in this dude's tent or something. And so this dude's like, bro, I will come out of my tent and beat your ass with my longboard, bro. And then and this guy keeps trying to get in his tent and he's like, all right, that's it. So he comes out and he comes running.
This is surreal. This is surreal.
This just happened. Like literally 30 seconds ago, I ran up the stairs. So he goes chasing after this other hobo, and the guy's pants are just falling down around his ankle. The guy who's running away with the bag of oranges. No, he's just bare ass running down the street, and this guy's running after him with a longboard.
All right. His dick was out.
Well, all I saw was his butt.
But it implies the dick was out.
He kept like reaching down and trying to pull up his pants, you know, but he's still juggling these oranges.
You know how it is when you juggle oranges.
He got the oranges, he got the pants.
He's on the run from a man with a longboard. You know, the usual day here. All right, I'm
gonna get hot with a hot cake, and I will say I like that.
Okay, I'm out of here. I'm gonna go get a drink.
We have to come up with a fun name for this podcast now. Like, there's no way we cannot not include the story a little bit into the podcast.
That was wild. That was a jolt. That was a surge.
I'll take the backpack with me.
Where the fuck did you get a backpack? I thought it was stolen.
No, I went and bought a backpack.
All right.
And a hat.
Nice.
All right, you guys have a good show.
All right.
Sick hat.
I'll be back in like 30 minutes.
Where were we? Eternal Sunshine?
Eternal Sunshine. And
yeah, I lost complete fucking train of thought on that one.
Eternal Sunshine and how you weren't thinking of it from Kirsten Dunst
character. Yeah, like her story is not even near as interesting as what's actually going on.
No,
in
for
the
sure.
Movie. And like you said, it's scandalous. It's fun. It's good, like, it's a good break.
Yeah, a little Shyamalan twist type vibe.
Yeah, whatever. Come on, let's just get that in here. Like, yeah. Let's get, like, real life in here. Let's get out of the dream world for a little bit.
Yeah.
It helps keep you grounded.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, it really does.
I appreciate it for that. But, like, I like it. I like what she did, her course of action, for what it did for the rest of the movie. Because then it leads you to, like, that big fuck-off ending. And you're like, oh, my God, this sucks.
Okay, so, all right, help me out. Because now back to me trying to understand, like, what is going on.
Uh-huh.
So at the end, we have, I've followed it all the way through. At the end, they're back together. They met in another way, because they always end up meeting, right? So they met in another way. They're back together. Kirsten Dunst, real time, leaks these tapes. They get them. How long have they been together at that point? Does that matter? Because I felt like I was just thrown into it. To assume they've been together?
The night before.
They just met that night before. Oh, and that was cutting back to the beginning of her running into the mail. Oh, holy astral realm time melt, bro. That is what I loved about that movie. I felt like it was blasting all over the astral plane and dream world.
You know how, like, he woke up and he had to go to Montauk?
Yes.
Had to go to Montauk. So they went to Montauk, and that's where he met Clementine with the blue hair.
Because they discussed in his dream, go to Montauk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was the blue hair. Yeah, Clementine with blue hair.
And so Clementine with blue hair equals real time.
Yes.
And green hair is what?
When they first met.
And pink hair is dream world.
Yes.
Okay, got it. On track.
Red and orange. Orange is fall. And she changes her hair goes by like the season they're in.
Okay. Yeah, I remember you saying
like,
keep an eye on her hair.
Like, it can be extrapolated as that. I've watched a couple of videos and shit, like,
okay.
Where people have tried to piece that together.
Yeah.
Which, like, yeah, it works. Like, but it, you can also just use the hair to follow what's going on.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, after you said watch the hair, That's something I definitely look for. But I think if you didn't point it out, I would have had to like go back and rewatch it.
Yeah.
Because I would not have caught it the first time.
Yeah, exactly. I never caught it either. Mm-hmm. I just was like, okay, random jumpy memory is cool.
Yeah.
And yeah, but you know, they met at Montauk, again, after everything, after he got his shit erased and, fucking gadzooks. Yeah. They went over and said, wish me a happy Valentine's Day when you wake up and shit like that.
So what the fuck is with, gotta talk about Elijah Wood, dude, the audacity. Imagine having the audacity to steal a girl from somebody's fucking mind.
Mm-hmm.
To burrow into somebody's crevices of their mind and steal their love.
Recreate what she loved about him.
I was horrified. I was like, you're sick. You're an astral demon. I was fucked. And I feel like that was another thing that I wrote down. Like, his lack of humanity by stealing Clementine out of Joel's mind. Like, you
And how
fuck.
He was just, like, talking about it with Mark Ruffalo. Like, it wasn't a big deal.
Yeah. I was like, oh my gosh, making it the casual chit-chat that you fucking stole this woman from a mind. Like, sickening. But, again, goes to, like, the weird clinical approach. Those weren't words. Clinical approach and, like, the employees just treating it like all work. Like, you know, like,
Mark Ruffalo
fuck?
Is like, I'm here to have a good time, but we probably should just erase the guy's memory.
Yeah, literally.
He's like, I'm kind of here to work, but I'm down to party too a little bit.
Yeah.
But like, y'all two are fucking on some other shit
right
now.
Next level, steal a bitch from her mind, have this weird affair. Like, he was just trying to smoke a joint and dance in his panties.
Like,
and
he just wanted some Kirsten. I was about to say a bad word. That would have been gross. I'm glad I didn't do that.
No, no. It took me a minute to get there, but I'm there. That's good. At least you cut it out. And
yeah.
Ratcher doesn't have to later.
I hit that skirt on myself.
You wanted some Kirsten cranberry kisses. Is
there
what
we
you
go.
Meant to say,
yeah.
I think.
Kirsten cranberry kisses. For sure. But yeah, no, Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind is fucking so pretty.
It was dope. It's filmed beautiful. Literally.
There's one, and like, they have some like fun, goofy, charming shit in
yes.
it too. It's funny.
Keeps it light.
Yeah, but there's all, I would say if somebody like doesn't take that movie seriously, there's only one part of that movie I understand it at, and it's the part where he's playing his younger self.
Yes, I was
it's,
like, kind
it's
of goofy.
A little, like, it's a little too much.
It's like a little too silly for what a heavy topic and heavy piece of his life he's going into. Like, that could have been a really raw memory, I feel like.
Yeah.
And they curved it with a silly joke.
It was just weird. Like, getting Jim Carrey in, like, pajamas and having really big sets. Like, just wasn't the right move. Jim Carrey being bathed by a big woman in a bathtub is
Why
not okay.
The whole baby the size of her palm?
That's what I'm saying.
I was like, stop it.
Yeah.
Stop
like,
now.
We didn't need that.
I could have gone my whole life without that.
Yeah, that was fucking awful.
But overall, bro, I thought it was beautiful.
I still think it's fun and whatever. Like, in the moment, I'm always like, this is so goofy, and I love it, and I appreciate it. But someone who doesn't appreciate it,
yeah.
I can kind of understand why.
See that being their turn-off point. Like,
yeah,
no,
like,
I
get
it.
I'm like, okay, this movie, this isn't for everybody. This
yeah.
is, like, this,
it was definitely different.
It's
like
definitely,
it
like, my style.
Mm-hmm.
I fucking loved it. And Jim Carrey's performance is just so good.
Why is he so fucking cool, dude? He's timeless and cool as shit. He's a classic. He's an American icon.
That's what I'm fucking saying.
Yeah, he's dope. All right, let's pop on Dog Pound.
Ooh,
is that what we're on?
Yeah.
All right.
Dog Pound is fucking sickening.
Okay, blast them through. I feel like a lot of people haven't
Got
seen
you.
Dog Pound, and it's
Dog Pound's,
so underrated.
Yeah, Dog Pound, right? So imagine it's a movie about juvenile delinquents all in fucking juvie. They're all in like a minimum security one where they all sleep in a big fucking bay. It's kind of like Basic Training, honestly.
Yeah,
like,
it was.
Everyone sleeps in a big bay and bunk beds and shit. Everybody goes to the same like little gym cafeteria. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like a fucking jail.
It's pretty, yeah, it's very minimum security. It's almost like a group home, but with higher security.
Yeah, like with just like correctional officers.
Yeah, it's not like prison.
Yeah, like.
But they're all there for different reasons when we meet them in the story.
I mean,
right?
Yeah. But, so like, they're all at this place for like different reasons. You have the main character, Butch. Butch is in there because he was already in juvie for something I don't think the story tells you.
Oh.
Or, What was he already
Which
in
was
for?
Black-haired Deadeye guy?
Yeah.
He...
What was he already
in there
for?
Oh, he didn't say what he was already in there for. I just talked about his... Yeah.
He was already in a juvie, and a correctional officer started fucking slapping him in the face and calling him, like, a pussy and, a, like, and pushing on him.
Oh, pause. He was in juvie for something that got him, like, almost... Like, he was supposed to be in until he was, like, 24 years old.
Yeah.
Some really serious crime. I remember that being
important. That was at the end. That's when they tell you.
Yeah, it was some weird violent crime, but he was supposed to be in there for a minute.
Yeah. But yeah, so the correctional officer was fucking with him, and he retaliated and fucked his ass up. So he got sent to a new place. Then you have Angel, who is this younger Hispanic fellow, and he got caught for fucking... He got caught trying to jack somebody's car and ended up shooting a fucking guy. Or, like, running him over. Did he run him over or shoot the guy in the leg?
Oh, I can't remember. I just remember him being young and me feeling like it wasn't that serious that he had to be there like that.
Yeah, it wasn't anything crazy. He was kind of a chill kid.
Yeah, he was just chilling.
No, he cut the guy. He took out a knife and cut.
Okay.
And then you have Davis, which is, like, this fucking wannabe hard kid. He's like, I get tons of pussy and yeah. I eat mom ass.
Yeah,
and
big clown energy.
Big fart. Yeah. I sell Xanax.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm a stepdad.
Yeah. I think that was actually a direct quote.
Yeah, from the movie. It was direct like that. But, like, no, he's one of those guys. Yeah. So, like, they all get in at the same time. They all get fucking naked, checked up.
Yeah.
Like, into the facility all at the same time. They kind of form, like, a little bond. Like, they're just, like, pseudo-friends. Like, mm-hmm. they hang out a little bit.
Because they're all the new guys.
Yeah, and then you have these fucking dickheads that wear black polos and think they're fucking tough shit. Because, yeah. like, they've gotten in the good graces with, like, the correctional officers. And they're allowed certain things now. They're allowed to, like, work jobs and fucking choose what they get to do.
Yeah, they're, like, king of the castle guys.
Yeah, but they're fucking bullies. And that guy starts fucking with them. So this movie starts taking a serious turn when it starts becoming a little bit more and more like prison,
mm-hmm.
where these fucking kids are just against themselves and just they start kicking the shit out of each other. Fucking, yeah. There's a lot of things of a sexual nature in this movie.
Yeah, just really like raw,
this movie
violent
degrades,
shit.
Degrades people.
Yeah, it's really.
It's fucking
honestly very disturbing stuff in it, but I think very real stuff, you know? Kind of like a lot of this what we were saying, like that's part of what I like about these movies. It shows you parts of humanity a lot of people want to look away from.
Dog Pound feels like if they did a really summed up version of the entirety of Orange Lab.
You were saying Dog Pound feels like if Orange is the New Black was summed up into one.
Yeah, it feels like if you took, like, the entire story of, like, Orange is the New Black, like, all of, like, the hard shit you get from, like, all the side characters, like, pretty much excluding Piper.
Yeah.
Like, all of, like, the characters you got to, like, grow and love to, like, know. Imagine if all of that was, like, jammed into one movie.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
Like, and it's really digestible and, like, everything feels like... Like, it's like, this is the natural progression of this. Like,
yeah.
these fucking sexually aggressive fucking children. Like, when fucking Butch rocked that motherfucker with the ping pong paddle.
That was crazy.
Oh, dude, my God!
He took off, and he ascended the ranks of kid jail. And that's when I feel like...
He beat that fucker with that mug.
Yeah, dude, he
oh
was going off.
Oh, my God,
he was popping off. You know, he was 22 when he was in that movie. I did some research about that guy. I was like, this guy's really talented. Like, what's his deal? He was 22 in that, and I don't know. I think he was playing someone 17. I feel like that's such a heavy role in general. The movie's so heavy.
Yeah.
And then I'm looking
and you're like,
younger
man, this guy's
people.
Fucking 17 going through this.
Yeah.
Because he's a good guy. Like, he's good to his friends. He fucks with them. But, like once you're in his circle, he's a fucking bro. He'll
yeah,
do some shit
the loyal
for
guy. And that's, like... I feel like we see...
Except when he fucking stole that gay kid's chicken nuggets. That was... Oh, not gay. The kid with AIDS.
Oh, yeah, who didn't even have AIDS, it turned out. He was just
AIDS.
Telling people he had AIDS. Yeah,
yeah. He had fake AIDS.
He stirred the pot.
Yeah, he stirred the pot.
Started
yeah.
the pot.
You tell me you wouldn't have done the same thing.
I'd
guys,
give the pot
I have
little stir.
Fake AIDS.
I would probably stir the pot with something a little less spicy. That was very spicy. That's a bold claim on his part, but I could see stirring the pot.
Yeah. It's smart. He didn't want anybody to fuck him.
That was smart.
Yeah.
That was a power move.
I'd say I have AIDS.
I would have to do something to go these people away. I feel like his was more of a cry for attention, though.
That's true.
And that is where it becomes a problem.
Yeah.
That's where he was
a problematic kid.
Yeah, he was a problematic guy. That's why he's in kid jail.
Yeah, he's in kid jail. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
So, but stole his chicken nuggets. That was the ultimate. That was top 10 anime betrayals for sure.
No, but
the way they portray prison or like just separation from society, like the way they portray it is so incredible. Like that scene where the fucking bully just steals my man's Tim's.
Yo, Oh, that made me mad.
Smooth let off with his Tim's.
Yeah, so he...
No problem.
So bully guy, you guys, bully guy is... bullying the big, like, frat... He wasn't frat. Like, the douchey, like, pussy
monger. He looked like some
dude.
Big fucking Sasquatch. He was just... He was cool because he was big.
Who? Bully?
Yeah.
Yeah, bully is bullying a little, like, weird, horny jail guy, you know, and he's like, give me your... Like, run your shoes. Give me your boots, basically. And takes his shoes, and that really upset me. And it just kind of, like... I mean, obviously we knew this guy was,
she
like...
She loved when he got him back, though.
Oh, when he got him back... Stop! I hate you,
dude,
stupid bully
guy. Dude, that's what I'm saying. This movie is
so
good.
You wouldn't love these kind of, like, characters that are supposed to be, would typically be, like, villains or, like, the antagonist, and you grow to really, like, love them and kind of, like, empathize with them. And
you're like, this guy isn't a fucking gangster. He's
not
cool.
He's just a kid. Like, they're all just kids and put in this, like, awful dungeon shit world with these toxic COs and really no outlet, and it just spirals into itself and festers and goes so crazy. And I feel like this movie, again, back to the whole humanity thing, tying in with all of them, we really see, like, we start, everyone's at a bottomed out version of humanity, right? We see everyone at their worst. We see what the intros, what their charges are, goes up through that. And then it's not until, like, a good 15, 20 minutes that they actually start making bonds and start kind of becoming likable at that point. And then we see their humanity build. And I feel like it's so frustrating because right when I was feeling like, oh, yeah, they have a bond. Everyone's good. Everyone's chilling.
That
movie's
gonna end happier than it did.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I was like, oh, everything's good. Like, Butch was supposed to, like, get out, you know. They were gonna, like, parole him. Everything was cool. Or let him out. Everything was cool. He had a week. He couldn't get in trouble for like a week or two, right? And I'm like, things are good. And it brings you, a little before that, brings you so back to you're trapped in this place and things aren't good and it doesn't matter that they're cool when they show that really, really, really graphic sexual assault scene. And it reminds you, like, yeah, this is jail and these are criminals and this is a structure and this is real life in their universe, you know? And their little late night giggle bonds in the bunk beds, like, don't matter anymore. It brings you right back to that really bleak reality they created. And if that's not enough, the ending really is so sickening. Like, it's crazy. It's so sickening and bleak. Oh, shit.
I saw that movie for the first time when I was 14.
Why did it come out when we were young? My mom had it on DVD. I saw it freshman year also.
I feel like... Yeah, like, I just feel like I watched it when I'm not gonna go ahead and put a date on it, but when I was younger.
Yeah, I remember vividly seeing it,
and
it didn't register.
No, it fucked me up. I loved it. Like, I watched it, and I cried.
Really?
Big guy cried in that movie. That shit made me so sad.
Yeah,
I was not there with that. Because I put myself in their situation, and I was just like, fuck, man, this is... the most devastating thing that would ever happen to me in my life.
Yeah, as a teenager, literally put into juvie, like, and that's like,
I was like, and
real
I'm like,
life shit.
And I was their age. I was like, I was like, it shook me.
Mm-hmm.
And I fucking, oh God, I love that movie so much.
It makes me feel so many
things. I'm trying not to spoil a whole bunch of things. Like,
yeah, because
I'll talk about it a little bit. Like, if somebody hears it and they're like, oh, that scene sounds interesting.
Yeah.
They can watch it. I'm not trying to give, like, whole big narrative parts away.
Yeah, because I feel like this movie is a little bit more... I don't know if obscure is the right word, but doesn't have as much attention as I feel like it deserves.
No, it's underground for sure.
Yeah.
Like, I would... not underground, because that makes it sound stupid. But, like, it's, like, not as well known as, like...
Yeah, it could be...
any other one of these movies.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't even say this is really like an artsy, like, artsy guy movie. I just don't... this movie's just so real.
It just makes me feel things.
This is a very raw movie.
Yeah, it's fucking crazy. But out of all of them, I don't know, because you recommended Eternal Sunshine and Dog Pound. And like I said, I saw Dog Pound 10 years ago.
Yeah, and then you got me to watch SLC Punk.
Yeah, I think
you were right. You said you were like, "You're this is gonna be one of your favorite
it's
movies."
It's your movie,
and everybody kept saying that. And I'm like, "God, dude! Like, I feel like I thought everybody was picking on me."
No, it's so good.
No, I thought everybody was picking on me. Like, everyone's like, "Oh, he's fucking. He likes all those fucking.
Fuck that guy."
And I was like, man, I don't even want to watch the movie. And then I watched it. I was like, okay, no, they were actually right. This is so my good. Fucking movie.
Yeah.
Like, oh my God, what the hell are you? We're three wise men and we follow that big star in the sky.
Yeah, he's like, extra dramatic.
Shit fucking killed me.
He's so animated.
Like, oh my God. And the guy was just like, who let you guys out of the insane asylum? Oh, the British. That shit killed me. No, but like I loved that movie. Like that movie was more feel good. I thought that movie was gonna be a lot more bleak, honestly.
Ooh, I feel like the ending,
it's super bleak,
was really hurt me. I cry every, his monologue at the end gets me. I don't care how many times I see it, I cry every time.
I fucking cried when I saw it. I cried that whole scene, fucking that whole, like the whole build up to that, man. I saw it happening and I was like, fuck, man. Mm-hmm. But no, I thought, I didn't realize that movie was going to be so jovial. Like a lot of that movie is happy.
Yeah, for sure. It's filmed really lighthearted. There's a lot of fun friendship interactions.
Wacky
like,
shit.
Yeah, exactly. It's even like the parts that are supposed to be a little more stressful. Like when we have fucking Sergeant, whatever the fuck, from Inglourious Basterds being the, like, European friend.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he's
Hugo
in there.
Stieglitz.
Yeah, Hugo's in there being the European friend, and even he's being,
they
like, menacing as the funny guy.
They have pressure sensitivities that I'm glad to show you right now.
He's funny. He's a funny guy.
This shit's so funny. $5,000 for this face. You can buy a fucking car for that.
Yeah, he's cool in it.
I fucking loved him.
Yeah, it was good.
But yeah, no, like, I thought that movie, I honestly thought it was going to be more like on a Requiem level of like.
Not nearly as far.
No. I would say it's more like on par with like Eternal Sunshine.
I definitely agree. I was thinking about it in the car earlier, like where the things kind of fall. And I think those two are more like lighter and have more of a like positive wrap up.
Yeah, for sure. You know what a movie you definitely need to see? Like, it needs to go on this list. They take a turn from, like, you know, like, the darker aesthetic. It's more of a dark comedy movie. Like, it fully tilts comedy.
Yeah.
It's World's Greatest Dad with Robin Williams.
Okay.
And Juni Cortez from Spy Kids.
Oh, my God. Okay.
As a teenager.
Awesome.
Yeah. So, basically, a little run through. It's Robin Williams is a teacher and a failed writer at the school that his son attends. And, his son is not very well liked. His son is kind of a fucking shit. Mm-hmm. Nobody fucking likes him at all. Like, he has one friend and that's it. He's kind of like a douchebag to him too, but he's one of those kids who's like, I fucking eat pussy, I watch porn, I want a big computer so I can watch porn.
Yeah, and one of those kids.
One of those kids. But he's like, he like talks really disgusting to women and he's like,
yeah,
he's gross. And in the movie he gets caught jerking off with a belt around his neck.
Nice.
And his dad's like, Jesus Christ, stop it. And he stops. And he stops, right? He's like, you're gonna fucking kill yourself. And son ends up dying. Not a big spoiler.
Oh my God,
it's pretty early in the movie.
That's kind of funny.
Yeah.
But really dark, like you said.
He fucking hung himself, and goddamn Robin Williams has this the most fucking heartbreaking crying scene I've ever seen in a movie.
He hung himself masturbating on accident. That's how he died?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
He died of autoerotic asphyxiation. So
classic.
Robin Williams is like, I can't let people know my son died like this.
Of course.
And Robin Williams fakes his suicide and writes a big suicide note.
Okay.
The suicide note gets published. And his son becomes a famous writer.
And from there he gets wacky.
And so Robin Williams forges a diary of his son.
Oh my God.
And everyone sees his son in a beautiful light.
This is crazy.
Yeah. And he has to live with it. The most narrowed down version of
what
that
is it
movie.
Called?
World's Greatest Dad.
World's Greatest Dad. Okay.
I will show you one scene from that movie.
Okay.
And shit is fucking heartbreaking. It makes me sad.
It sounds intriguing. All right. All right. We'll wrap it up. If you guys want to watch any of the movies we talked about. We had Eternal Sunshine, Vivarium, Dog Pound, Requiem for a Dream, SLC Punk, and now we have honorable mention, World's Greatest Dad, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then Minnie actually drew this really cool thing he's been working on through the show for you guys. He's just wrapping it up, I see. Anyone listening, I can't even describe what I'm looking at. I honestly have never seen anything like this. It's breathtaking. You can't keep them in suspense much longer. Here it is. Here we go. It's looking good. So if you want prints of that, it's starting at $300.
T-shirts coming soon. Ask backwards t-shirts. Let's put a bandana on them real quick.
Call it Bratcher. It's the end of the day. It's perfect. All right, cool. All right, well, we'll see you guys. What's today? What is today? Tuesday.
It's election day today.
All right, guys, be safe. And then we have another episode on Saturday. So we'll talk then.
Coming to you from dreary Portland, Oregon.
What the fuck?
Shut up, lady. Fuck up the audio. Your hosts, Katie Cassidy and Aaron Brancher, have some hot takes on film, cinema, and the movies. That's all the same thing. It's the Ask Backwards Podcast. You idiot, you moron, you stupid bitch.